to the Divided Kingdom Show. This is Lou Caravelli, and it's a beautiful day here in Maryland. Beautiful day, just about maybe high 70s, nice fresh air. One of those rare days this time of year you don't get very often, so we appreciate it when we have them. Well, this is a Christian news program with a Christian emphasis, and I'm going to start right off today with a couple of things that are follow-ups for things I talked about a week or maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago. We talked a little bit about some of the teenagers kind of running wild, I'd call it. So here's an article, very fresh, just a day or two old. Let's see now. The title says, "Shooting at Florida Beach, Teen Takeover Leaves 17-Year-Old Hospitalized with Gunshot Wound." This is from Fox News by Eric Mack, June 1st, 2026. A 17-year-old was hospitalized with a non-life-threatening gunshot wound after a social media organized, quote, teen takeover, unquote, at a Florida beach turned chaotic. Clearwater, Florida, police are warning of a shutdown of teen takeovers after a boy, 17, was hospitalized following a shooting tied to a social media meetup Sunday. The Clearwater Police Department's Threat Management Unit was made, quote, aware of a planned gathering at the beach, unquote, Deputy Chief Michael Wallach said at a Sunday news conference. That's a Sunday night news conference. He added that some of those people who gathered decided to break the law tonight. And he continued, that kind of behavior cannot and will not be tolerated. I want to send a very, very clear message to anyone who plans to come here and engage in that kind of behavior that we saw this evening. Don't do it. If you do, your trip to the beach will end up with a trip to jail. Police nationwide have been dealing with a spate of teen gatherings that have turned or led to lawlessness. Assistant Police Chief Wallach said, you can phrase it however you want. Teen takeover? Meetup? It's all organized on social media, Wallach stated. And he also said that hundreds of people gathered in this incident that led to the shooting that occurred during a fight that broke out. The shooting happened around 5:15 p.m. Eastern Time on Sunday. And as I record that, this program, that's just 2 days ago, took place in the 100 block of Coronado Drive, according to Clearwater Police. Officers responded to reports of gunfire and found the teenage victim suffering from a gunshot wound. He was taken to Orlando Health Bayfront Hospital, and Mr. Wallach said his injuries are not thought to be life-threatening. I'm going to skip down a little bit. Police have not publicly identified those detained, announced charges, or said whether they recovered the weapon used in the shooting. Witnesses described a chaotic scene as gunfire erupted near the beach. One beach resident, Dylan Gilbert, told Fox 13, Tampa Bay, quote, I heard probably what I figured were 6 or 7 gunshots. I was like, what's going on? Unquote. Another resident, Jeanette Walker, said she and her daughter saw the injured teenager after the shooting. And this is a quote, I told my daughter, oh my God, that boy was shot. They have towels on his stomach, and they could see blood coming through, and it looked like he got shot in the stomach, unquote. The incident unfolded during the first weekend after school let out, a time when police said they were already aware of an uptick in teen beach attendance and had additional resources in place with assistance from the Pinellas County Sheriff's Office and Largo Police Department. And Assistant Chief Wallach said, this is the first weekend of school being out, and this is going to be the last weekend that this type happens. And again, I'm going to skip a little bit of this. It's been a crisis for years. This is a quote. They need to really crack down and figure out who's doing the Facebook, who's sponsoring it, and stop it. And that was a quote from Walker. Now, let's see. Let me look back. It was Walker. Oh, resident Jeanette Walker. All right, so she's a resident of that immediate area. And she said that takeovers are damaging the beach community. She said, quote, "These takeovers are ruining it for the people who work down here and are trying to make a living. Everybody we heard from today peed off," unquote. Police have not released the identity of the injured teenager or said who organized the gathering online. Investigators also have not confirmed how many shots were fired. Well, emphasized that despite the violence, Clearwater Beach remains safe for families and visitors, and said police intend to prevent future meetups from escalating. He said, quote, "Clearwater Beach is a family-friendly place. It's safe. This is a bunch of kids acting like kids, and I'm telling you, it won't happen again," unquote. Well, now this is Lou Caraboli speaking. I respect what the policeman says, but somehow the kids I've been around were not shooting each other up with guns. Well, I understand he doesn't want to ruin the businesses there, but then again, one kid did get shot, so this thing seems to be kind of out of control. And so many of them are using cell phones, obviously. That's how they're communicating. And apparently one or two will just say, "We're going to have a get-together. Come join us at so-and-so place at so-and-so time." And I guess that's kind of hard to stop. I don't know. How do you stop it? Good question. If you have any ideas, write to me. And if you have anything else you'd like to comment to me about, write to me at Lou Caraboli, LouCaverly. And the address is Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. If you didn't get that, I'll get that address again once or twice more during the program. Just get some pencil or pen and paper handy. This is a Christian program, so we try to emphasize things that are of interest to citizens and other responsible people. This program, of course, as many of you know, was really begun by my wife, Elizabeth, who sadly passed away about 15 months ago, and I've been trying to keep the program going. And some of you came through and helped to keep it going with some donations last week. I thank you very much for that. It's your help that keeps this program on the air. I can't do it myself. I just don't have the funds anymore. But with your help, I'll keep it going as long as possible. And if you want to check our website, the website is DividedKingdomRadio.com. That's DividedKingdomRadio.com. Something seems to be wrong with the archives at our website, and I'm going to have to get together with our web mistress, Miss Angel, and find out just what's wrong with that. They seem to have totally blanked out. That's what's wrong with it. And I don't know the cause. I don't know if it can be remedied. I certainly hope so. But in the meantime, if you want to hear the program, there are a couple of alternate times and some other websites you can go to if you have the internet. First, you can go to the main Thursday evening, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either go to WWCR.com, that's Worldwide Christian Radio.com out of Nashville. And the frequency on shortwave, if you want to listen to it that way, is 8.8. I take that back. I'm getting dyslexic. Getting dyslexic in my old age. 4.840. I'm getting my digits twisted up there. 4.840 megahertz at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. That's Thursday evening. And then the program offers a repeat Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Different frequency, though. It's still WWCI.com if you want to listen direct on the internet. And it's 7490 megahertz. And all those frequencies are given on our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com. So if you miss that, as long as you have the access to the internet, you can easily look it up. And there are some other venues. I won't go into it in detail here. I do once every couple of weeks to keep people informed. Those two you can find on our website. I'll say one quick one. KStarTalkRadio.com. KStarTalkRadio.com. And the lady who does our website has set up that website, KStarTalkRadio.com. There's a lot of good old programs on it. A lot of good information. Dr. Stan's programs. Many of you remember Dr. Stan Monteith. He had many excellent guests. Well, now, let's move on. The next topic I thought long and hard about. This happened right across the Chesapeake Bay from where I live. I live in the eastern side of Chesapeake Bay, over toward Delaware. This happened in the greater Washington area, Stafford County, Virginia, just around the Quantico Marine Base. How this happened, that is, how it was allowed to happen, I don't know. And I'm going to talk about that as soon as I give some of the bare facts. But this was reported on any number of news media in the Washington, D.C. area. WTOP, the all-news station, talked about it extensively because it happened right in their backyard. But this article was from the Washington Times by Kelly Sadler on Monday, June 1st. And the title says, American deaths at the hands of non-English-speaking drivers mount. When will Congress pass the Leela's law? Jing Dong, a non-English-speaking naturalized citizen from China, was charged over the weekend with two counts of involuntary manslaughter after slamming the charter bus he was driving into an SUV on Interstate 95 in Stafford County, Virginia. A teenage girl, her brother, and their parents were killed in the crash after that vehicle caught fire. A woman who was in the SUV immediately in front of the bus also died. That's five people. I'm just inserting that myself now. Five people. I think he's now been charged, by the way, updating this with five counts of involuntary manslaughter. He's still in the hospital under guard. Mr. Dong, a driver based in Staten Island, New York, obtained his commercial license in 2024 despite not being able to read, write, or speak English. And Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy wrote Saturday on X, quote, unacceptable. This is exactly why we are holding states accountable, enforcing the rules of the road and cracking down on drivers who can't speak English. And Secretary Duffy went on, if you can't be properly trained, read our road signs, or communicate with law enforcement, you have no business driving a bus. Unquote. After a series of highly publicized crashes caused by non-English speaking illegals, the Trump administration has made it a priority to remove undocumented and unqualified foreign drivers from U.S. roads. The administration has enacted a rule barring some immigrants from obtaining or renewing commercial driver's licenses, issued guidelines requiring stricter enforcement of English language proficiency requirements, threatened noncompliant states by revoking federal funding, conducted state audits, and deployed U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents at way stations across the country to enforce immigration laws within the trucking industry. After this crackdown, New York has halted the issuance of new CDLs, that's commercial driver's licenses, New York has halted the issuance of those to non-citizens. However, that hasn't solved the problem of the CDLs that is already issued. Now, this is Lou speaking. The next thing should make your blood boil, because anytime you go out on the highway, this may be a danger to you. And where is common sense in all of this? In fact, that's a question I'll ask about a lot of the things I talk about tonight. Where is common sense? Okay, back to the article. In 2019, Governor Andrew Cuomo signed into law dangerous green light, that's its nickname, green light legislation which allowed criminal, illegal immigrants to be issued CDLs, in some cases with their licenses labeled no name given. I'm going to stop right there for a minute. I looked up information about driver's licenses and how to get them in my current home state, Maryland, my home state when I was growing up, Massachusetts, and New York State. In all three, if you are getting your license for the first time, you must pass a written test. Doesn't say anything about this law in New York. Maybe they don't want it widely known. Maybe they've taken it off their website. Maybe it was never there because they didn't want people to know about it. But how do you pass a written test if you can't speak or read English? A simple question. How in the world do you pass a written test when you don't know what it says? Obviously, someone was just in the most woke kind of way, giving immigrants who couldn't speak English, whether they be legal or illegal, giving them driver's licenses in a way that no ordinary American citizen would be allowed to do or to receive. Well, moving on now with the article, it says a federal audit conducted by the Department of Transportation late last year found that 53%, so I'll interject, more than half of New York's non-domiciled CDLs were unlawfully granted, often lacking verification of a visa or work authorization. The department flagged roughly 33,000 non-compliant licenses and demanded that New York revoke them. But the state refused. As a result, the Trump administration withheld about $73.5 million of New York's federal highway funding. Even after the crash Friday, New York is in the process of suing the Trump administration for withholding the federal funds, arguing the cuts are illegal and politically motivated. Well, this is Lou again. I could say some things, but I'm not allowed to say them on the radio. I'm being a good Christian man. I try not to say them anyway. But that makes my blood boil, and I would think it would all of you listening as well. They're suing the federal government because the federal government wants drivers to be safe. And because they're largely Democrats, they try to pin it on politics and say, oh, you're just doing this for politics. Never mind the fact that five people were just killed last Friday. And you'll note, too, that this driver was legal. He was not an illegal immigrant. He was a naturalized citizen. But that doesn't change the fact that he couldn't read English. All right, let me see. They have a few other statistics. I'm going to skip down a little bit in the interest of time. Some states are aligning with the Trump administration's efforts. After federal warnings, California, Texas, and Missouri immediately suspended or altered their issuances of CDLs to non-citizens. Remember, CDLs are commercial driver's licenses. In April, Indiana enacted a law requiring CDL drivers to demonstrate English proficiency and allowing employers to be fined up to $50,000 for violations. I'll interject that to my way of thinking, it should be a lot higher than that. This crackdown has already led to the revocation of commercial licenses for nearly 1,800 drivers in the state, and that was Indiana. You know, something I don't find mentioned in this article was the fact that how did a bus company give this guy a job driving that bus when they must have known, if they did any kind of background check whatsoever, that he couldn't speak English. He couldn't read road signs. He couldn't read warning signs about accidents up ahead or road construction up ahead. In fact, I think this is probably what led to that crash, the road construction. And I don't know. I think if I was a lawyer, I would be drooling thinking of the lawsuits I could form against this bus company. Well, back to the article. After a high-profile fatal 2025 turnpike crash, Florida has taken aggressive legal and administrative actions against out-of-state CDLs, which included suing California and Washington for violating federal highway safety laws by issuing CDLs to illegal aliens. That crash included a tractor trailer driven by an illegal immigrant, Indian national, who made an illegal U-turn that resulted in 3 fatalities. Again, let me say something there. It's quite a trick. Making a U-turn with a tractor trailer? I don't recall that I've ever seen such a thing. Not in traffic, maybe. Maybe some tight turns on side roads, but not on interstates. And the article says still more can be done. In the State of the Union address this year, President Trump urged Congress to pass the DALILA law. The legislation was named after DALILA Coleman, a 5-year-old girl who experienced a broken femur and skull fractures, as well as diplegic cerebral palsy diagnosis after she was involved in a multi-car pileup caused by an illegal alien from India driving a truck in the sanctuary state of California, where he'd been issued a CDL. And Mr. Trump said, referring to the 6-vehicle crash in which DALILA was pinned in the back seat, quote, DALILA Coleman was only 5 years old in June 2024 when an 18-wheeler tractor-trailer plowed into her stopped car at 60 miles an hour or more, unquote. And the DALILA law requires states to limit CDLs to U.S. citizens, lawful permanent residents, and certain temporary work visa holders, tying compliance to Federal Department of Transportation funding, mandates that all CDL tests be administered strictly in English, and requires states to revoke CDLs previously issued to undocumented immigrants. Seems pretty common sense. The legislation passed out of committee and is sitting on the House floor in the House of Representatives, where it will likely linger until Republicans can get their act together and pass a few of these winning 80-20 domestic issues. In the meantime, like the president is doing on so many issues, the executive branch will fight the good fight alone. Well, I think I'm going to call my representative, who is probably in favor of this anyway, Andy Harris, in Maryland here, a good Republican. I strongly suspect he's in great favor of this law that is proposed, the DALILA's law. You might want to call your representatives as well. All right, so that is one to get your dander up, so to speak. Well, there's been a great deal of talk the last few days, and I suspect this will continue for quite some time to come, about Joe Biden. And I think it was just today, this is Tuesday that I'm recording this program, Tuesday, June 2nd. I think it was on this very day that her book came out in the bookstores. And the first article is a rather sober one from the Wall Street Journal. Jill Biden on her memoir, and a marriage where difficult things were not discussed. The former First Lady talks about her husband's health, losing the East Wing, and Nancy Pelosi. This is by Kara Voigt, I guess it's pronounced as V-O-G-H-T, June 1st. So this came out actually yesterday, on Monday, June 1st. Jill Biden knows people are mad about her new book. That is mad, angry. They're mad that she's only now disclosing that she thought her husband, former President Joe Biden, was having a stroke during his debate against Donald Trump. They're mad that she publicly praised his debate performance after the fact. She said, quote, "You answered every question. You knew all the facts," unquote. Even though she privately agreed with Joe's assessment that he had effed up, unquote. They're sad that this book exists at all, picking at Democrat scabs from the 2024 presidential election. Not that anyone has expressed that anger to her face. But she says with a small laugh, but today's day one. So, who knows what's to come, unquote. It's Monday morning, the day before the publication of her memoir, View from the East Wing. Do you know the full extent of what the former First Lady discloses in the book? If they know anything, it comes from interview clips that revealed what Jill was thinking as she watched her husband on stage saying, quote, something nonsensical about beating Medicare, unquote, as she puts it in the book. And let me say, this is Lou speaking now. We certainly do not want to disparage the former president when he was suffering from what obviously is some form of mental incapacity. But a lot of the criticism now is on Jill for not bringing these things to the fore sooner. And especially, more so than Jill, on his aides who tried to cover it all up. And it does make you wonder how much of the policies and actions of the Biden presidency were brought about by aides, not by Joe Biden himself. But I want to stress that we certainly sympathize with him. He also is suffering from prostate cancer. So our prayers are with him that everything will go well. But that doesn't change the fact that a lot of things were covered up. And that's something that all the Democratic Party has to face. Now, this is, again, the interviewer, Kara Boyd, speaking. Quoting Mrs. Biden, it's one chapter in 35 chapters, she tells me. They're going to see this is not a political book, unquote. This memoir, she says, is about being a, quote, ordinary woman living an extraordinary life, about work-life balance and the demands of modern femininity. It's about her life as a teacher, a grandmother, and as First Lady. I am a political spouse, Jill says, age 74. But it wasn't told through that lens. Well, this is a very good lengthy article. I'm just going to pick a couple of excerpts out of it because the time is flying by, as it always does. And the author of the article says, let's return to that rainy Saturday, July 20th, 2024, when President Biden huddled with his top advisors at the family's vacation home in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, and he wondered whether he should drop out of the presidential race. He had not been kept, quote, in a bubble of delusional optimism, Joe writes, but was drowning in a deluge of negative headlines about his reelection prospects. From the porch that afternoon, Biden called his wife to join him. And this is a quote from the book. He said, you know, what do you think, Jill? What do you think? And Jill said, I know. I said, no, Joe, I'm not giving you my opinion. This is a decision you have to make for yourself. And she was adamant that she would support him no matter his decision. She was adamant that he was up for the job, and yet in the book, she voices doubts. If not in his capacity to serve, than in his ability to overcome the public beliefs that he couldn't serve. In those trying weeks after the debate, she wondered if she could trust his doctors, advisors, or even herself. She writes, had he grown too old for the job and I hadn't noticed? I didn't think so, but could I be objective enough to be sure? Let's skip down a little bit. She mentions through the book, we learn there are several things Joe Biden didn't share with her husband. She didn't think he could pull through the 2020 presidential primaries after his four early showings. Fourth in Iowa, fifth in New Hampshire, and No, this is 2020, remember, not 2024. She had worried about his lack of sleep in the final year of his presidency, waking up 7 times one night to use the bathroom, she notes, which of course can be a sign of a prostate issue. Anne flagged a concern to Joe's doctor instead of Joe because, quote, it's always been the nature of our relationship that we've maintained a veil of discretion around personal health, she writes. She knows how this sounds, quote, old-fashioned, unquote, as she puts it in the book. She says, we kept it separate. It was just the way we grew up, she says on Monday. I think it's generations. She similarly never told him about her menopause symptoms, the insomnia, and night sweats. And then, of course, there are the things she didn't tell the American people. The things that Democrats are agitated to be revisiting now. Well, I'm going to have to stop there because of a lack of time. But it's a very good article, responsibly written. It doesn't let politics seep in and just gives the simple facts. That's from the Wall Street Journal. Jill Biden on her memoir, etc. Monday, June 1st, 2026. I will say, too, in that last comment, my wife Elizabeth and I are older than Joe Biden. Elizabeth was older, and I'm older now than Jill is. And yet, we shared everything together. And I think most married couples do. It seems a bit odd, to me, at least. And I'm sure there are others like this, but it does seem odd that they would not discuss their health with each other. I thought that marriage was more about doing just that kind of thing. All right, now, here's another little thing that emphasizes the political aspects of this. From the Western Journal, by Jack Davis, also June 1st, former Biden staffers turn on Jill over a new book. Former First Lady Jill Biden's revisionist memoir, which seems to gloss over the scars the Biden era left on the Democratic Party and on America itself, is getting flack from former Biden staffers and supporters. The book, entitled View from the East Wing, a memoir, paints the former First Lady as having serious doubts about her husband's health after the disastrous June 2024 debate that was the turning point in his efforts to seek his second term. However, staffers in the public were told former President Joe Biden was in top form. John Morgan, a Florida attorney who raised funds for Biden's 2024 campaign, called the book unhelpful, according to the Los Angeles Times. He said it was ripping open a healing scab, and that's never helpful. And he goes on to say, in my opinion, she was the main problem. She loved the life and didn't want it to end. He went on, if you like fiction, it's good, Morgan said of the book, adding that Jill Biden's claim that her husband never acted the way he did during the debate since that night defies the smell test. His keys should have been taken long before that night, Morgan said. Double A's of the former president are irked about Jill Biden's attempt to rewrite the narrative, according to Axios. One former Biden official said, I just wish they would give some more time and space and let people move on. It all feels so disingenuous. Another official said, the through line between her book and Kamala Harris is that they blame everyone but themselves for the loss. And another former Biden campaign aide was also critical of the book and said, it's just so selfish. The Bidens preach selflessness. Let me say that again. The Bidens preach selflessness and service above all. And every decision they've made since he decided to run for re-election has been about themselves. It's also ironic. The only people undermining President Biden's legacy are the people closest to him. Some Democrats would like the Bidens in the past to fade away. Political noted. Pete Giangreco, a Democratic strategist, said, nobody wants to re-litigate the worst debate performance since the Greek Republic. Why are we talking about this? Why are we talking about Hunter Biden? Why is Hunter Biden talking about Hunter Biden? Your time has passed. Move on. The Republicans and all their super PACs are going to outspend us 3-1, 4-1. That's what we need to be focused on right now. Well, there you have some of the Democrats saying some very unkind things. And, of course, their whole idea is on politics, not the well-being of Joe Biden. All right, enough of that. Now we're going to switch to an educational topic, which is something I can relate to, having been a math teacher for over 40 years. And this is another good article, also from the Wall Street Journal. The previous one, by the way, the one critical of Joe Biden, was from the Western Journal on June 1st. Another June 1st one. I got a bunch of these on the same day. This from the Wall Street Journal. University of California professors are begging schools to reinstate the SAT. More than 1,100 University of California math and science professors are urging University of California regents to reinstate college entrance exams, saying that unprepared students are lowering academic standards and draining teaching resources. The request, delivered in a two-page letter last week, cites a sharp decline in readiness among students studying science, technology, engineering, and math. Nearly one-third, now listen to that, nearly one-third of students taking first-semester calculus at UC Berkeley, quote, displayed severe preparation deficits, unquote, that letter said. The faculty wrote, we have now observed preparation gaps so severe that instructors must reteach middle school mathematics while simultaneously teaching the material students need for sciences, engineering, economics, and other quantitatively demanding fields, the faculty wrote. And they went on, UC has finite resources and can help only so many students, unquote. And that letter follows the University of California, San Diego faculty report last year, saying that the number of students placed in classes to remediate elementary and middle school math before they could take pre-calculus increased to 8.5% from 0.5% between 2020 and 2025. Now, this is Lou speaking now. Let me put that in perspective. In that five-year period from 2020 to 2025, those that have to take remedial classes before they could take notes pre-calculus, which is basically an advanced algebra course, increased 17-fold, multiplied 17 times in just 5 years. Now, let me put my two cents within for a minute. As a former math teacher, I took calculus in high school. And believe me, if you do not have a good grasp of middle school math, geometry, algebra, algebra 2, and trigonometry, at the very least, it's almost impossible to do calculus because calculus involves the trigonometric functions. And if you don't know what trigonometry is all about, you are going to be totally lost. What really worries me is this statement about they need to remediate elementary and middle school math. How did they get into colleges if they couldn't do that? Well, I'll tell you how. Because they have ceased to require any kind of entrance examinations, like the SAT or the ACT. And it goes on in this article to say, critics have long said that college entrance tests, such as the SAT and the ACT, limit opportunities for Black, Hispanic, and poor students. More students who are making the exams, or more schools who are making the exams optional, are getting rid of them altogether when the pandemic accelerated that trend, said Henry Thader, executive director of Fair Test, which advocates against the exams. Today, more than 90% of schools don't mandate the exams, Peter said. Well, again, let me just put my 2 cents worth in. If you don't have any kind of exam, how do you compare students from different schools? Public schools, private schools, big city schools, small town schools. You have no real basis for comparison. How do you decide if they are prepared or not prepared? You can give them a test when they come to the college, but by then it's too late. You've already admitted them. And if they can't do the math, well, how are they going to do science that needs calculus? You know, when you take physics in high school, you don't use calculus. You use the more basic math. But a good college physics course uses calculus. If you can't do the trig, you can't do calculus. Well, let me just read one or two more paragraphs, and we're going to move on to something else. The University of California stopped requiring ACT or SAT score in 2020. At the time, some faculty warned the move would make it harder to assess applicants. And that's putting it mildly, in my opinion. Especially alongside rampant high school grade inflation. In other words, a lot of teachers take pity on students and give them higher grades than they really deserve. That's human nature, but it just lessens the standards. And the standards in this country for math and science have been going down for years. But more recently, schools have been re-tightening test mandates. In 2022, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, reinstated the SAT requirement, saying it helps determine applicants' preparedness and identify promising students from disadvantaged backgrounds. And in 2024, Dartmouth restored the test requirement. Yale followed suit last week. And they decided they had gone test optional in 2020. And 4 years later, 2024, they mandated the students submit a score from SAT, ACT, International Baccalaureate, or Advanced Placement exams. Now they must submit either an SAT or ACT score. Plenty of students have been doing so anyway. 90% of Yale's class of 2029 submitted either an SAT or ACT score. Schools in the University of California system, on the other hand, generally don't take scores into account or collect testing data because the admission process is, quote, test free. All right, I'll stop there. You get the general idea. And as you can tell, I'm in favor of the test because how in the world do you compare students and see if they're ready if you don't have some sort of a uniform basis for the comparison? Okay, next one. If I had to do this, I would never become a teacher. The Washington Times. That, by the way, was from the Wall Street Journal about the SATs and so forth on June 1st. Here's one. Sunday, May 31st, from the Washington Times. Maryland school districts require teachers to potty train toddlers as pre-K for all, that's the name of the program, expands. And I'm not going to read much of this. As I say, this applies mainly, of course, to elementary school teachers and pre-K. But I'll just read the opening. The four largest school districts in Maryland have implemented a state policy requiring teachers to provide potty training to children up to age 5 as taxpayer-funded pre-K for all expands among low-income families. Well, that just boggles my mind. This is one more example of one of the many things that is causing the kids' education to decline in this country. The mere fact that teachers are not given the chance to just teach. They're also required to do 50,000 other things, keep endless records, handle bad-behaving kids without much support from above. And now, help the kids go to the bathroom. I guess that's the easiest way to say it. Well, if I were a teacher and I suddenly found out that I was going to have to do this, I would be a custodian, sweep the floors before I would go along with this. But that's just me. And I'm speaking now as a high school teacher. Happily, most high school kids, I think all high school kids have attained this little ability before they get to high school. Thank goodness for that. That was from the Washington Times.
It's a 4 or 5 page article. I just gave you a couple paragraphs, but it says it all, I think. And that was Sunday, May 31st, Washington Times.
Okay, have you got your electric vehicle yet? I haven't. Above my price range. Plus, I don't know where I'd charge it up. Don't know how far I could go if I wanted to go visit my friends and relatives up in Pennsylvania. Could I make it on one charge? It's about 240 miles heading out toward Pittsburgh. I don't know. I never hear much about that, how far you can go. Maybe I just don't look in the right places. But here's an article from the Gateway Pundit on June 1st. I guess I got a lot of these on June 1st. By Michael Austin. And this was, what's the word? Not recopied, but it appeared originally in the Western Journal. The electric vehicles lead major car maker to report first loss in decades. The Japan-based car company, Honda, has been listed on the stock market since 1957. I didn't realize it went back that far. But the combination of electric vehicle bets and Trump trade policies led to its first ever year in the red. Honda said in a statement for a report from Fox Business, quote, EV demand has declined considerably due to the rollback of environmental regulations in the U.S. and other factors, unquote. The company faced $9 billion, that's a big billion with a B, $9 billion in restructuring costs because of the lackluster electric vehicle demand. It suffered a $2.7 billion loss in the past fiscal year, according to a report from the Associated Press. Honda Motor CEO Toshihiro Miebe, I apologize if I'm massacring his name, his last name is spelled M-I-B-E, he confirmed that it would scrap a previous target to make electric vehicles account for 20% of profits by 2030. Total losses from electric vehicles are expected to hit $16 billion. Well, as I say, first of all, I couldn't afford one. Seems to me that they cost about $40,000 minimum. That's a bit out of my price range. Second, I don't know where I charge it up. I guess there are places in my neighborhood. I live out in the eastern shore of Maryland. It was a pretty rural area. The nearest big city is Salisbury, Maryland, and that's 45 miles away. So I don't know if I could even charge it up. I guess I could. But that's the thing nobody tells me about. Also, how far can I go in a charge? As I said, could I get to Pennsylvania? What if I wanted to make a trip to Florida someday? Do I have to stop several times to charge it up? And each time charging takes a certain amount of time. It's not like where you pull up to a gas pump and 3 or 4 minutes later, your tank is full. These are the kind of questions I think Americans are asking. Not to mention the fact that these are going to put a huge strain on the American grid, electrical grid. These are doubts that I have. And I suspect a great many ordinary Americans had those same doubts. And of course, they want to put a rosy picture on it. So the CEO, Mr. Miebe, M-I-B-E, remarked for Fox Business, we will continue our research to develop future technologies, including electric vehicle batteries. We will get back on a growth track, unquote. The company will still set a goal of carbon neutrality. Oh, there's that phrase we always hear, carbon neutrality. Honda managed to cut their losses with growth in that motorcycle business. It sold 20 million more motorcycles in the past fiscal year than the previous year. So the gasoline-powered motorcycles are doing pretty good. All right.
Let's leave that. That was from the Gateway Pundit on June 1st. What else do we have? Well, one other sad update. Several weeks ago, I mentioned an article, actually a couple of articles, I think, talked about scientists who were connected with nuclear energy and other very important topics in this country were dying or disappearing. One of them was Melissa Casius, and her body has just been found. This is from Fox News, June 1st. Hiker discovers body of missing New Mexico nuclear lab worker, police say. One of the bodies of the 11 mysteriously missing persons that have potential ties to U.S. nuclear secrets or rocket technology has been discovered by a hiker in a New Mexico national forest. Police have identified the remains of Melissa Casius, age 54, a missing Los Alamos National Lab worker. Her disappearance became part of a wider swirl of speculation over scientists and lab-linked employees who vanished or died under unclear circumstances that spurred President Donald Trump's attention and the House Oversight Committee investigation. The New Mexico State Police Investigations Bureau was informed Thursday that the hiker found Casius in the McGaffey Ridge area of the Carson National Forest with a handgun alongside her remains, according to NMS PBI Facebook post, which I guess is New Mexico State Police. The cause and manner of death have not yet been determined, according to police, which noted the Office of the Medical Investigator identified the remains as those of Casius and are conducting further, this is in quotes, further anthropological examination, unquote. Well, that gives you the gist. So whether this was suicide, homicide, natural causes, the gun would lead us to believe it's not natural. But beyond that, nothing else is really given yet about her death. Well, we got time for about one more, maybe two. Here's something else. That, by the way, is from Fox News, as is this. Ex-Iowa school superintendent sentenced to prison as an illegal alien found with firearms. We talked about this maybe a month and a half, 2 months ago. The former superintendent of Iowa's largest school district was sentenced Friday to 2 years in prison after pleading guilty in January to falsely claiming U.S. citizenship, unemployment paperwork, and illegally possessing firearms while unlawfully in the United States. Ian Andre Roberts, who served as the top leader of Des Moines Public Schools, is expected to be deported to his native Guyana in South America after completing his sentence, according to his attorneys and the Associated Press. The ruling caps a dramatic downturn in the longtime educator's two-decade career in urban education, according to the AP. It first unraveled after an immigration operation led to his detention and resignation a year ago. Prosecutors said Roberts knowingly misrepresented his citizenship status on employment paperwork during his time in the district, which serves 30,000 students, according to the AP. Well, again, this is Lou. Let me put my 2 cents worth in again. Didn't they check anything? When I applied for teaching jobs, I had to go through a background check, make sure there was no criminal activity in my background, had to be fingerprinted. Didn't they do that for this guy? Not just for a teaching position, but for the superintendency of the school system. Well, things are pretty lax in a lot of places in this country today, and the results are, well, obvious, from driver's licenses for immigrants that can't speak English to this. Things were not done in the way that they should be done. Well, our time is almost up. Let me say again, if you'd like to contact me, I'd love to hear from you. Write to Lou Caverly, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, And the address is Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland. And the zip code is 21609. That's Lou Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And as I said before, this program can continue only with your help. We have several steady people that month after month help us to stay on the air. But we need a little bit more. So I'm asking you if you can give. It doesn't have to be a lot. Even a small donation is helpful. Even a few postage stamps, as Elizabeth always said, they can be very, very helpful because I try to answer every donation with a thank you. And if I missed you, I apologize, and next time around, I will get to you. Also, don't forget about the website, and I'm going to get those archives straightened out. I hope I can get them straightened out. I'll certainly try. But right now, they just show blanks for the different dates. But the website does have the different ways you can listen to the program. Several good websites. Also, Worldwide Christian Radio, WWCR.com. And it gives you the times of the program, Thursday evening, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And if you want to listen on shortwave and not the internet, 4.840 is the frequency, 4.840 megahertz. And on Saturday morning at 8 a.m., it's 4.790, 4790. Well, it's been great having you as listeners. I hear our music coming on. We'll have more good articles, more good discussion next week. I'm hoping at some point to get a partner with me. It was always so good to have Elizabeth. We could discuss things back and forth. And I'm trying to search for someone who can join us, preferably a lady, so we get the woman's point of view. Thank you for listening. Tune in again next week to The Divided Kingdom. Good night. We'll be right back.